Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman and Ed Battagliano. We thank you for listening to American Family Radio. You can watch the show on our Today's Issues Facebook page. We're live video streaming. Where do we got cameras in here? We got cameras there, there.
And here.
Right here.
We're just a regular NSA right here with our cameras everywhere. We're like living in London here, you know? We're going to get to Steve Jordahl in just a minute. Steve's joined us from the AFR News team. I wanted to ask you real quickly, we didn't talk about this much, but you said you were reading where Donna Brazile, the former chairman of the Democrat National Committee, she said she was scared for her life?
Yeah, this is Matt Drudge. Now, Matt Drudge
right,
runs
the Drudge Report.
He tweeted over the weekend, he must have gotten an advanced copy of Donna Brazile. Now, she's the former interim Democratic National Committee Chairwoman, Donna Brazile. Okay. She's written
a new book.
Okay. That's out, I think, tomorrow. It's called Hacks, the inside story of the break-ins and breakdowns that put Donald Trump in the White House. In that book, she's very critical of the Hillary Clinton campaign. She came out last week and said that in advance of this book, she had written an article, I think, for Politico to promote the book. She said, I found out that the Democratic National Committee basically agreed with Hillary Clinton to fund her campaign when they should have been simply refereeing the primaries against her and
Bernie Sanders.
So Drudge says, Brazile writes in her book, she was haunted by the murder of DNC's Seth Rich and feared for her own life, shutting the blinds so snipers could not see her. So this is Matt Drudge saying what he read.
I'm shocked.
That is shocking.
If that made it into a book.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
I haven't read the book. I'm very interested.
We haven't seen this, but Matt Drudge is a very credible, he's an aggregate His news site is just links to news sites, okay? But I'm talking about for him personally to come out and say, this is what it says in the upcoming book. I don't think he would say something that would be an error. There, you know, that's stunning. It's not stunning to me that that would be her fear. It's stunning to me that that would actually make it into a book, because that sets off a civil war. Well, other things she said and done, and things that the Clintons have done, have now set off a civil war within the Democrat Party, because everybody knows. Got to remember, half the Democrat voters supported, just about half of them supported Bernie Sanders. And now they know it was all rigged against them. They didn't like a 10 to 90 within the party, or even 80-20 or 70-30. You're talking about basically a 50-50 split within the Democrat Party. And now one of those 50% knows that the other side rigged the primary against them. And Donna Brazile is saying she was scared for her life if it's accurate.
He's claiming, Drudge is claiming that this comes from her book, and we get advanced copies here. And publishers send out these advanced copies because they want stuff like this to happen, and then everyone go run and pick up a copy of the book when it comes out on Tuesday.
I don't know how the liberal news media is going to ignore that one.
I mean, what this is clearly demonstrating. Is that all the suspicions over the years, not just only about the death of Seth Rich, but also this other, you know, these deaths that seem to have come around the Clintons. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm just saying the Clintons and the left wing has always said that's a vast right-wing conspiracy talking about these. There's nothing there. And now you have the former Democratic National Committee chairwoman allegedly saying that she was putting the blinds down because she feared for her life.
In her house. Yeah.
That's like you say, Tom Clancy novels.
Right.
Kind of John Grisham. That's where this kind of stuff looks most comfortable.
Steve Jordahl is with us. Good morning, Steve Jordahl.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Ed and Walker.
Morning.
From our news division at American Family Radio News and OneNewsNow.com comes Steve. What's on your agenda here this morning?
I wanted to give you all an update on what happened while you were in your first hour here. The authorities in Texas have given some new information and confirmed some other information about the shooting. We can hit it and run with something else if you want. But they confirmed the name of the shooter as Devin Kelly. So now officially they say that's who it was. 10 people are still in critical condition in the hospital. So the death toll, which stands at 26 now, could rise. There is evidence that the suspect may have died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Although, interestingly, and this is kind of a little chilling, while he was driving away from the church, he called his father and said that he had been shot and was likely not going to survive, and then maybe put the gun to his own head. So there's an autopsy that's been done, but it looks like right now it was a combination of this guy from across the street that shot him. Mm-hmm. He was, as we have reported, he was dishonorably discharged from the Air Force. Usually the authorities say when someone is dishonorably discharged, they are no longer allowed to purchase or carry firearms, although they say that they will have to look at the specific one before they confirm that the guns were illegal. They suspect they were, but they need to do a little bit more investigating into his discharge. He was licensed as an unarmed security guard, the kind you might see at a concert or something that does not carry a weapon. They said that there is video from inside the church. Either the church had a video system taping the sermon or people grabbed their phones or whatever.
Yeah, I think they videotaped the service.
Well, I doubt that any of this will ever see the light of day, which it shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
But they will use that in their investigations. They recovered three firearms from the suspect, Mr. Kelly, two handguns, and then the assault rifle that he used. They said this is a very important domestic. It was a domestic situation with his mother-in-law in the church. He had sent threatening texts to the mother-in-law, and the quote here is, it was not over religious beliefs. The police are saying it was not an anti-religious thing. It was a personal vendetta against her.
Well, I don't understand. Then why go into the church and shoot the church up?
Well, you're asking to read the mind of a very deranged
person. I'm saying, well, how do the officials know that it's not a religious thing?
Because they have the evidence of the texts threatening the mother-in-law. The mother-in-law went to the church. So by that,
but I'm just saying, I'm willing to let the thing play out. But I get a little frustrated with how quickly law enforcement will rules out these kind of things. Because I'm guessing he knew where his mother-in-law lived.
Yep.
And so why not? If you're only out to get her,
right,
and have no animosity towards Christians in general, why go to the church? And now we've got 26, at least 26 people dead.
You have an
and she wasn't
point.
Even there.
You have an excellent
point.
Yeah,
you could wait for somebody to drive up in their car.
Yeah.
Nonetheless.
If you're waiting for some body in
and
particular.
I think another angle to this that is adding to Ed's question is that some of his high school friends describe him as kind of a devout atheist. You know, that's all he talked about was how dumb you are if you believe in God. So those different
He may have hated Christians.
Yeah,
he may have hated Christians.
He may have had a hated Christians along with his frustrations with his in-laws, and all that together equals what we have.
What a lot of times what happens, and we don't know. We'll wait and see what happens here with this little more investigation. But to add skepticism, I too get a little tired of, because you'll have something like what happened in New York last week with the jihadi who gets a truck and mows down people that he doesn't even know who are riding their bikes. And then within minutes of the police getting there, it's like the investigators are going, this had nothing to do with Islam.
Right.
You know, they did say this had nothing to do with the religion of... One of the investigators said that last week had nothing to do with... Something to that. Anyway, I remember the shooting in Chattanooga when that took place, when the jihadi went to the military recruiting station and killed those people. You remember that in Chattanooga? Mm-hmm. And days and weeks passed, and the FBI was going, this is under the Obama FBI, right. You understand. They were saying, we just don't know what a motive would have been. We haven't been able to figure that out yet. And you're going, the motive is right in front of you. The motive was this was a Muslim jihadi who wanted to kill American military people to please Allah. Mm-hmm. This is not hard.
Right.
But the FBI is going, huh? We don't know what a motive might have been for this guy.
You all bring up great points. I'm not advocating for this.
No. I'm responding to what these law enforcement are saying.
Absolutely. So. I wanted to also bring up one more thing. We were talking, I think, a little bit about what churches need to do. I just got off the phone not too long ago with a guy named Chuck Chadwick, who is the founder and president of the National Organization for Church Security and Safety Management. And he has some advice of what a church should not do. Cut three, Brent.
With the concealed carry laws or the licensed to carry laws in all the different states being so different, even the ones that require training don't require any kind of tactical training. Even here in the state of Texas, where we have pretty liberal laws, and actually we just passed a new law allowing churches to have a security team made up of totally untrained people, no background checks, no liability insurance, everything. That's the thing that I would warn churches, you know, about is, you know, just have, always, you know, Bubba Joe's got a gun, make him charge security. With absolutely no training, no tactical training, or no financial responsibility also.
So that does come with a heavy financial burden if for some reason you shoot the wrong person or whatever. So what this – and I'm not advocating this program because I don't know much about the National Organization for Church Security and Safety Management other than we've used them often as resources in this kind of a situation. But – a solution that he has come up with, and again, not endorsing it, but I'm telling you about it. They do training at their facility in Dallas, and people from other states send their personnel in the church. It costs about $500 per person, which is manageable, I think, for a smaller church. $500, and what they will do is they will train these people in tactical training. How to deal with a specific situation like this? They will make sure that they comply with all of the concealed carry and applicable laws in whatever state they're from, and then they will hire this person. What that does is, when someone comes in, and if there is a lawsuit to follow, he's now an employee of this company in Dallas.
Oh, that's interesting.
It defers the financial responsibility away from the church.
Hmm.
So that's a good thing to know. Yeah. I mean, we don't want everybody to come next Sunday packing and just hope, you
know. Yeah, and to that point, I've recently been taking – I took a course here in Mississippi, a firearms course, with 8 hours of laws and all the bookwork stuff along with hands-on training. But what I learned from that is I'm not an advocate for government getting involved and forcing people – to go through all these kind of things to even carry a gun. I think we have the Second Amendment, but I think it's Americans' responsibility to make good decisions and to train themselves, just like you practice driving with your teenager. Train yourself. I don't think it needs to be government imposed, but I think it needs to be self-imposed. We need to be trained and not everybody just toting around guns just because we can.
Yeah, if I'm a church. Elder or deacon or pastor, administrator, whatever you want to, some kind of leadership, and you're this week you're going, see what happened there. We need some kind of security plan
in
for our church,
yeah.
Small, medium, large, whatever your church size is. Certainly, I'm thinking who in our church is qualified for this kind of position. Like the gentleman said who you were quoting there, oh, Joe's got a gun. Get him.
Yeah. You don't want 10 people in a big church opening fire.
That's right. What I'm saying.
That's why the tactical training. I hadn't thought about that. You give them some tactical training.
And a plan, and
you give the people some instructions.
And like Walker was saying, you know, a lot of churches now do have security teams. in place with people who are not only licensed to carry, mm-hmm. but have some training in this. And they probably, if you're wise, you go through mock drills, know, like they do for a tornado drill example at school or a fire drill. You go through drills for mm-hmm. what might have happened. Also, it seems to me, if you want to, what do you call it, profile?
Right.
In this situation, I know you're not supposed to profile.
Well, that's law enforcement. People sitting on the street, they profile all the time. And
well, I don't have a problem with profiling. Right. Profiling to me is not racist. It's not racial. It's profiling for a reason so that you can narrow down what you're looking for in a typical situation.
Yeah.
It's just common sense.
Well, most of these mass murder people are white. You know,
well, I would say
what I'm saying is profiling doesn't necessarily have to do with the race of the person. You want to look for
threats.
Threats, yeah. Right.
No, right. But my point is if you're a security team member at a church and you're looking for something that maybe would be suspicious from the get-go, I'm looking for and you see a male come in, especially a younger male, come into your auditorium worship center that you don't know who he is, mm-hmm. and he's by himself, that's suspicious. Potentially. I'm just saying, you've profiled.
You got on a checklist.
I'm a single male, we don't know, coming up to the church. Because it is to profile, almost always, these kinds of situations, as in Las Vegas, for example, are caused, I don't know about the white element, although it seemed to be more whites than other.
I think the D.C. sniper was black.
The male. Yeah. It's almost always male.
Yeah.
Right. I can't think of a woman doing it.
No. So I think that's something you can, a loner, they describe his guy as a loner. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
The church that I come from in Colorado Springs put security measures, tighter security measures in place after the New Life shooting that happened there when a gentleman came in and killed two precious young teenagers.
When was that?
Church. That was back in 2007, I want to say.
Okay.
But when my church in Colorado Springs, it was a large church, but every church could and should do this. They kind of had a whole security measure, and they morphed in the medical team too, because you should have someone ready in case someone has an epileptic seizure or heart attack in your service. You should have someone that knows some medical stuff, and they had a security team and a medical team. They were just people that rotated. They had two or three teams that rotated every third week. It was your week, and you sit in a place where they can know where to find you if it's a medical emergency, and you have procedures in place.
Yeah, and this isn't just because of what's happened in Texas, but it makes it more relevant. Everybody, we need to be more aware of our surroundings, because one thing I learned is when you're looking at your phone, you're aware of about 3 feet around you.
That's a good point.
And just when I walk in somewhere, I look for a threat. If I see a young mom with her daughter, that's no threat at all. But you see you don't have to describe it, but you can tell, is there somebody have a ski mask on? You know, do they you see a gun or a knife? Things like that.
Somebody acting nervous.
Yeah, but if you're totally out of it,
okay, I get your point.
You're more vulnerable. You know,
that we never would have had to think about 10 years ago.
Right. But now
it's good to,
you do need to think about it.
We do. We live in a different age.
Yeah, you're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Steve.
On Friday, a military judge said that Bo Bergdahl would be able to walk free. He got a dishonorable discharge. He was demoted or in rank to private and was fined about $1,000. This is the guy that walked away from his unit in Afghanistan, was held captive by the Taliban for years, and caused the injury, if not death, there's disputation about that, of several of the military people who went after him. But a judge said, well, now you've served enough time. I don't know what the reasoning was.
And he pleaded guilty. Bergdahl pleaded guilty last month to the charges of desertion.
He was. He did.
So
we had Colonel Ralph Peters was on Fox and Friends this morning. Colonel, obviously, a military background, and had some thoughts about the reaction and what this means.
How could this be? How could Bergdahl, who went over to the enemy, who deserted his post in a combat zone, get the same sentence he'd get for shoplifting at the PX? So there was outrage, but now, at this point, honestly, it's sorrow. My reaction is sorrow, because this is so much bigger than one jerk like Bergdahl. The Judge Nance, Colonel Nance, who pronounced his sentence, set a precedent that will affect our military, our armed services, for decades to come. The message he sent with this light sentence, dishonorable discharge, a light fine, for what Bergdahl did, makes desertion a minor offense. The desertion, look, in our military, the worst sin of all, the cardinal sin, would be turning your weapon on your fellow soldiers.
Right.
But the second worst sin is deserting your post, deserting your comrades in wartime. And that is what Bergdahl did. People on the ground believe that soldiers died looking for him.
Absolutely.
The Pentagon only admits the wounds. But there are people who carry the pain all their life, and Bergdahl walks free, and everybody's outraged.
Well, and rightfully so. I don't know that much about military law or procedure, but he pleaded guilty to desertion, and he was there. The judge said, "Well, he was held captive by the Taliban for nearly 5 years. 3 more years have elapsed while the legal process unfolded." Well, first of all, the 5 years being held by the Taliban, that's questionable in terms of counting it against you, because my understanding is, and maybe this was because of pressure, but he cooperated with the Taliban. Again, maybe he was trying to preserve his life. But to say that while the legal process was unfolding over charges that you have pleaded guilty to,
The other thing that comes of this that I either knew and forgot or didn't know at all is that when he walked off his post, he was a private first class, which means that sometime after he deserted, he was promoted to sergeant.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that happens.
I would, the only way I could see that happening is maybe if they didn't realize, if they thought he was kidnapped, you know, in honor of him being a prisoner of war and being kidnapped,
could
before
be.
They knew that he was guilty of desertion, they maybe promoted him.
I bet the guys serving with him knew within days.
Yeah.
That it was a desertion and not a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a kidnapping.
Fox interviewed one of his fellow soldiers who was on the same Army base, and I think one of the soldiers who went out looking for him. And he said that he was disappointed. He was on Fox and Friends, I believe, Saturday morning. But he said he was disappointed in the judge's ruling.
General Robert Abrams, the commanding general of Forces Command and the convening authority in the Bergdahl case, will be able to review the sentence, according to an Army spokesperson. Now, this may be just CNN, but they say Abrams could potentially reduce Bergdahl's sentence. I don't know how you reduce it.
This is a military court, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's maybe the dishonorable discharge.
It could. He is challenging some of that, but
that's really surprising that he got off that easy. Well, in a military court.
Yep.
Too, I guess. I don't know.
Well, the prosecution was wanting 14-year sentence.
That's what they asked for. Although you desert in wartime, then you could get a bullet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying that's a...
That's how serious.
That's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
Yes.
It used to be. All right. Thanks for listening to the program today, everybody. We hope you have a great day. Keep praying for the folks in Texas there at the church. And we'll see you back here tomorrow.